I'm Christopher Lighton. This is Open Source from the Watson Institute at Brown University. We call it an American conversation with global attitude. This time the talk is about the World Cup feeling around the U.S. presidential election. Ever since Barack Obama nailed the Democratic nomination in a choice now with the Republican senator and one-time war pilot and prisoner in Vietnam, John McCain, America's standing in world opinion has begun to rise. And Barack Obama has been decisively embraced, I think, as the world's candidate, whatever good or ill that will do him with Americans who vote. Our guests in London, Anthony Barnett and Kanishk Tharoor, are in effect general inspectors of the new American politics with the web magazine Open Democracy, which has launched Open USA precisely to train the world's attention to what is and isn't happening in the States and what matters to the global interest in this election. Anthony, would you begin? It's not a global election, and it is a global event. But what do we mean by that?
Hi, Chris. Well, I think it is very very interesting. I think you've got two candidates who are very, very striking personifications of different aspects of what's going on in the world. McCain is himself a very interesting world figure. I think born in Panama, is that right? His father was the admiral of the Pacific Fleet. His grandfather was also an admiral. This is a figure coming from, how could we put it this way, the world was his aircraft carrier.
Interesting.
And he represents, if you like, that kind of America for the world, a traditional America with all of its maverick creativity and defiance, but also quite a threatening military America. And Obama is a very striking figure. I was thinking about this coming here. You see, generally, the left parties tend to produce the right-wing parties tend to produce characters, in a way, like McCain, who in different ways, or Bush, whose father, after all, was head of the CIA and ambassador in China, who are part of a world class, who are very familiar with the world in their own way. Churchill was like that in the in the UK. Whereas the left or the left of centre parties generally tend to be led by rather parochial, local figures who've made good. So if you just take Clinton or Blair, these are both local boys who made good through the education system. And in their case, in my view, they both were suckers for globalization. They bought it like arrivists, like naive arrivists, little puppies sort of wetting themselves for globalization. Now, Obama's also made it through the education system, but he is representative of what, in a way, I don't know what Kanishk thinks of this, in a sense of Kanishk, more of Kanishk's generation, who are world, they know the world in a different way, not in terms of power, but in terms of culture and experience. So his growing up in part in Indonesia, is having a Kenyan background, he's an international figure. He represents that kind of a possibility of America.
Kanishk, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that's true about Obama insofar that he has captured the imagination of a generation of people, not just within the U.S., but around the world. I mean, if you looked, I think yesterday there was an article in the New York Times, which we blogged on Open USA, about how young French black people are receiving Obama.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting about that is, and this I think this is goes to the larger point about Obama, is that he is he's almost a receptacle for people to project their own politics onto, because he's read in a completely different way, I think, in France than in the US. And it just goes to show and we can get into that, but it just goes to show the kind of international implications this election, this campaign itself is having, that go beyond strictly US foreign policy, but are very much about the nature of the American leaders in play.
But don't you think, Kanishk, that there's something, it's not just because he's black, it's because he comes from a world background. So his book, Dreams of My Father, is very interesting. I mean, even Hawaii is a sort of rather remote part of the United States. There's a sense that you feel, if you've had any kind of international experience, that you know sort of where he shares the same world in a way that doesn't come from His color, but from his international background.
Could I draw you out a little bit on that, Anthony? I think the idea that he is an international figure, but not a world figure of the Churchill or even inheritance Rockefeller Bush stripe is fascinating. He's also, let's remember, he is an heir of the civil rights movement. No matter that he was not a African American of the slave ancestry. He's also a child of immigration, in a sense. He's also the child of a very, very first-class education. He's an intellectual and a writer. He was first in his class, president of the Harvard Law Review, which is a kind of academic distinction that very, very few presidential candidates have ever had. I mean, the man is a thinker, but he is somewhere between international class and world class.
I want to draw Kanishka out on the point that I made, but the thing is this. I think that he's very smart, and what I like about this is that he doesn't pretend that he isn't. So you feel you're in the presence of somebody. I mean, that speech he made on Sunday, on Father's Day, to a predominantly black audience in the South Side, Chicago, and he said, you know, bring up your children, read a book to them. I mean, he led up to that beautifully, but I mean, the assumption was he can read, you do read, it's great to read. This is something one does. This is how you bring up children. And you feel, hell, yes, you know, he reads books to his kids. He can write. You know, that's that. That I like that very much. But I don't think that was what the attempt, which has already been made and may be made again, to say he's just a liberal, is an attempt by the American right to say he's a foreigner. And so I don't think this intellectual quality, I mean, may or may not succeed, but I think there's something which is distinctive about him in terms of the fact that a lot of people in America in different ways and a lot of people around the world in different ways have a different experience of the globe, different international experience, which he didn't have to be black to tap into that. And I want to know whether Kanish agrees with that.
Kanish?
I agree with the fact that he has his international experience, as you called it,
formation,
and his worldly, his sort of natural and sort of very unforced worldliness resonates with a younger generation of Americans, who are much more exposed to the world already. But at the same time, just to tie a few things that we've been saying together, I think what's interesting about Obama and the way he's received in the rest of the world is that he's not received He doesn't capture the imagination of people, say, in France or in the Middle East for the same reasons as he does in the US. For example, I think, you know, Chris, you said that he's a child of the civil rights era. He's the child of all these, you know, long strands in American history. But I think what's powerful about him in the American context is that he, through the way he's built himself, built his campaign, and built his very, very, you know, finely polished message, has basically transcended that history, and that history is certainly there, and he recognizes it. But it isn't a banner for him to wave. Now, when you look at the way he's received, say, in France, it's exactly the opposite. Obama is seen as a black hero for the blacks in France. And as a sort of positive affirmation of black identity.
Yeah, the new negritude.
The new negritude, exactly. And he is the champion of that in France. And I think that just goes to show how I mean, Obama is a kind of he's a bit of a he's you know, as a global figure, he's half shadow, half mirror at times.
Well, even in America, can I just say this? The black thing is a great deal more ambiguous than we realized at first. Juan Cole had a good word, a metro racial for Barack Obama. And he's actually of a type, I mean, as playing on metrosexual, I suppose. But he's of a type that's fairly, I won't say common, universal, but Hawaii, for example, is a sort of metro racial state. But sports, for example, is full of metro racial characters. The one that comes to mind biggest is Derek Jeter, the shortstop and captain of the New York Yankees. But remember Bob Marley, too, as a sort of metro racial personality. This is a complex thing, and I begin to wonder if the world understands it better than the United States has so far.
There are very big changes of political culture taking place in the wake of what you might call the end of the Cold War and the unification of the world after that. And Obama speaks to that. So if you take what a wonderful job that I think that Kanishk is doing editing Open USA, is that I think there is a kind of global readership who have a different experience of, they're not looking at the American election in terms of what is British interests here? What are Europe's interests? How should the Chinese think of the United States? There's a global generation, many of them of its writers write for Open Democracy, and many of its readers read Open Democracy, and they're looking at, and they're right to look at, the extraordinary presidential contest that you're now having, in terms of the fact that there's a new kind of global culture emerging. It's not a unified one. It will have all sorts of arguments. But it's no longer looking at the world in terms of national interests or continental interests in the same way. And a lot of that readership is in the United States as well. So one of the things we're doing is trying to sort out the sort of questions you're asking amongst ourselves. And insofar as we're influential, that will alter the way the world thinks about both itself and the United States.
Where do you look, Kanishk, for interesting leverage on these questions? Are you looking to China? Are you looking to Africa? Are you looking to India? Where do you find a kind of an acute insight or interest?
I think what's so global about this election, I think two things. First of all, is the ability of people around the world to access that sort of daily churning mill of information available on the internet and through other sources much more easily than before about what's happening in America. And two is the sort of the resonance of figures like Obama, and to a slightly lesser extent, but to an important extent, McCain, that those figures have elsewhere. Now, I think normally. This is in lead up to the answer to your question, but normally in the past, when we look at the global implications of an American election, we always think of very sort of mechanistically of the way U.S. foreign policy, say, affects China or will affect Africa or will affect the Middle East and so forth. I think what you're finding here now with this election is the growing recognition, and certainly the recognition that we're trying to sort of solidify through Open USA, that the global implications of this election lie in the sort of underlying themes beneath this race, issues like race, issues like generation, issues like globalism. Now, I think similar discussions are happening along those themes elsewhere in the world. So, for example, we published a very interesting piece written in India about, can there be a Muslim Obama? And similarly, we've published pieces about how Palestinians' reaction to the notion of Obama as a somehow global progressive figure. There are lots of reactions around the world to what Obama represents that go beyond looking at U.S. foreign policy, which is what I think is one of the more interesting things about this campaign. Yeah,
he unlocks possibilities. This is the he unlocks the imagination. If he could do that, what could I do? What could we do? Where would this that sense that there's something, even though in his own policies he's quite conservative, even right wing as a candidate, he's transformative. He unlocks a potential, and that's something which this, if we can call it this global generation, which is sort of global because of it's the music, it's not just the internet, though that's part of it, it's also the way it's travelled, it's also it's multiracial in terms of its knowing people who've intermarried or who it's had an international experience, that's very, very big now, and it's thinking these issues through of where does this that he unlocks that.
I love that idea, that phrase, Anthony, that he unlocks the imagination. I found writers at a Jamaica conference saying very much the same thing. I mean, there is something like sitting down to write a poem, they were saying, in effect, about this man. He invites a response. He challenges the mystery. What can imagine?
It's his smile.
Or something. Well, it's the notion that, of course, we should be talking about stuff. We should be talking to the Syrians, for example, but we should be talking to each other. We should be listening very carefully. Imagine who's going to pick up, say, in the Muslim world, answer that invitation.
Well, this is what we're seeking to do with Open USA, is to take that step further. So I think it's still it's going to be very interesting. The most interesting in a way is that I think, I mean, I know I'm it's a hostage to fortune and so on, but I think he's going to win. And
you and Rupert Murdoch.
Rupert Murdoch just bets both ways on a thing like that. This is not his judgment. One part of his empire is Seltzer is backing McCain, who's one of Murdoch's paid hirelings. So they're betting both sides of the street.
Mm.
If he does win, he'll sort of win on his own, in some respect, on his own terms. And then, of course, the media will build this up so that the media is bound to be disappointed. That's part of the aim, that he will then be brought down. We will then be disappointed. That will create the cynicism which will sell the Murdoch papers and the Murdoch culture. So we need to think about the implications of that. But I think that I think we need to sort of start the conversation now, which will prepare us for this amazing achievement.
As
he gets it.
Two themes there that we have to deal with. One, does his popularity in the world, does Obama's popularity in the world burden him terribly in the States? But furthermore, is he simply courting a huge crash of feeling?
I think Obama's popularity in the world shouldn't, and I don't think it does.
You noticed Tom Friedman's column the other day from Cairo said, in effect,
we
hate to say this and it may hurt Obama, but he's wildly popular in the Arab Muslim world.
I think only amongst a shrinking portion of the American population that is still somewhat bigoted and prone to the idea that his support in parts of the world would somehow make him less American. I don't think that in this day and age it will have a huge effect on the way he's received in the U.S. Of course, it can always, when there's somebody, in a Hamas representative speaking positively of him, these things can get spun. But I think the American population is old enough and wise enough not to confuse his popularity with some kind of, his international popularity with some kind of anti-Americanism.
Could I ask you both, for me it's an important question about what's known as American exceptionalism. Anthony, you and I have discussed this before, and your feeling has been broadly that the United States has got to learn a much humbler role in the world. A lot of Americans think so too. I think of Parag Khanna's broad argument that the United States is now running third with China and Europe as the example to the developing world of how to get rich, how to get stable, how to live in a peaceful world. And at the same time, Obama is a personally shining example of things that seem only to happen in America. And I think there's a revival of the sense that, for better and worse, the United States is the, as Madeleine Albright said, the indispensable nation, if not the last best hope of Earth, and that it will play an outsized role even more in different ways if Obama becomes president. What's your view of that nowadays, Anthony?
Yeah, well, my views are shifting slightly. I've been talking a lot with Kanishk about this, and I think there are different things here. I don't think America is any longer the indispensable nation. What Madeleine Albright was saying was power politics. America as number one, uno, numero uno, and we will, the iron, the fist,
yes,
the aircraft carrier behind that. And I think that this you know, obviously it's a mightily powerful and economically very influential country and will remain such. But this sense that it will dominate the century and write the century through its combination of wealth and force, I think has been broken in Iraq, whatever now happens in Iraq. Mm-hmm. And the world doesn't want it, it's contemptuous of it. And therefore, I think an element of normalization of America becoming a country like other countries is very healthy, to be very welcomed. Americans, I know, find the idea quite, you know, rebarbative. And in that sense, one of the discussions we've had on Open USA is Obama like Lula? Is it part of, you know, as in South America now, native candidates are? Is it just this is a healthy thing you ought to be able to do? So America is becoming a regular country, and that's a great achievement, and that's one we welcome. Now, there's another aspect to that, which is that there was always something about America which said, This is what it's like to be a modern country. The world will be like us. We are the future. Progress resides here. And the rest of the world, so certainly is true after 1945, certainly when I grew up, the American way of life, its freedom, its wealth, its liberties, its music, this was what it was to be a modern person. And this is no longer the case. I mean, the last 10, 15 years, I think people have not, the young people have not seen America as what it's like to be a modern person. But Obama, however, does say something about, well, actually, if you know, it really is an open political system in some ways. Perhaps this is, it recreates a potential of saying, of people saying, yeah. Right. Well, you know, we want to be like that. This is America means it. It's talk the talk about democracy and freedom and human rights and so on. Actually, you know, it is delivering. It means it. And that does represent a potential realighting of the flame of American sort of, you know, of the American example.
And what would John McCain victory do to that?
It takes us back to the aircraft carrier. Kanish, what was your?
Well, I was going to go back to your original question about, you know, could Obama only happen in America? Is that kind of Obama exceptionalism? I think, I mean, if it's a difficult question. And there's so much built into it. But I think, you know, if the U.S. is one of the last major democracies, should Obama win, to have a premier from a traditionally marginalized social group. I mean, if you look at Brazil, there's Lula from a very humble background, which has never happened before in that part of Latin America. If you look at, you know, in India, you have a Sikh prime minister at the moment. India's had a woman prime minister in the past. So too has the U.K., and it's, in a sense, I think this is partially what Anthony means by the normalization of the U.S. It's entering into a continuum of other democracies, where in the past it's seen itself as somehow separate from that. Why Obama seems so exceptional and has caught the imagination of so many people around the world is precisely because the U.S. has a kind of global symbolic power that no other single nation has, and Obama is definitely cashing in on that.
Well, it's had it in such a negative way for the last 8 years.
That too, of course, yeah.
What would it mean to go so steeply into a figure of what the world seems to want?
Yeah, but, you know, celebrities rise in other countries. I think you don't want to... there is something there, but you don't want to... The country of Hollywood prides itself on its celebrities, and celebrities have to be very, very obsessive And those kind of obsessives generally tend to come from, you know, so to speak, I don't mean this in a pact, I'm looking at it technically in sort of, you know, working class or lower middle class backgrounds. There's some money, there's some opening, there's some advantages, and they fight the fight to get to the top, and they're willing to pay those human costs. And there is a celebrity element to Obama, but I think that he's the, you know, there's something quite authentic and thoughtful about him. And you feel you're in the presence when you watch him of somebody who is capable of thinking. This is a very, very, you know, it's not just Bush who didn't have this characteristic.
No, quite right.
He does position himself. He's a politician. He's very careful. Of course he is. You know, he's a calculating person. You wouldn't want somebody who wasn't calculating as president. But he's got enough self-confidence to change his mind and explain to you why he's done so, and that you're in the presence of somebody in a fast-moving world who's got that capacity is very admirable.
No, it's striking. It's the first time since JFK that you can look into a man with a first-class intellect and see it churning.
But what can I ask you a question? Because
sure.
So did you want to say? Because what do you think is going to happen now? What do you think Obama should do? He's no longer the insurgent figure, you know. He's the lead. He's in terms of the polls. He's now the leading candidate. How should he now proceed? What's going to happen?
I'm asking
America first.
Steady as she goes. I think my own two bits is that. And I felt this for a long time, but the little secret about John McCain is that he is old and worn, not terribly bright. It is the Republican Party that is fractured and angry. His financial base is uncertain. The old evangelical base of George W. Bush, but the whole momentum of the Republican thing is stalled. I think Obama has got to normalize his presence and let people notice that this is a very subtle character, but he's the subtle sort of character that's popping up all over the American economy, American cities, American movies, American sports, American life. He's the new ethnic in a sense. He's no more exotic really in the American context today than John Kennedy was in 1960. So let's get on with it. Who knows? I don't think John McCain comes out a strong candidate. Norman Mailer, it always sticks in my mind. Norman Mailer, in one of his very last interviews, said to me, all the Democrats have to do is show that picture of John McCain with his nose in George Bush's neck at the Republican convention in New York in 2004, and among other things, be reminded how much shorter John McCain is than George W. Bush. We've had a strong dose of this Republican regime for a long time now, and I think the country is hugely fed up with it. And in that sense, I think people are going to realize, wait a sec, you know, maybe his middle name is Hussein, but this is not a long leap for America to go to Barack Obama. That's my own humble opinion.
I have to say, I mean, as much as powerful as the McCain represents formal years of Bush argument is, I'm a bit wary of it, and I worry that in the long term it might not be as successful a sort of pitch to run with that as the Democrats think it is. I mean, I think it betrays in some way this use of this argument to constantly compare McCain to Bush. I think it betrays Obama's claim to subtle thinking in many ways, because I don't think I think there are very many important differences between McCain and Bush, and differences that McCain will probably, you know, with increasing clarity distinguish in the coming
months. Remember,
but
each one of those distinctions costs him something of Republican enthusiasm, Republican money. We're going to have to watch every detail of it, but that's where I'd love to hold it for this moment and just say, let's do this again.
If Bush launches an attack or allows Israel to launch an attack on Iran and just bombs those nuclear facilities,
Could we hold that for the next conversation? That's a huge test of both candidates, frankly. What would Obama say and do? What would the United States Senate do in a campaign year? What would John McCain do? Let's pray for peace in the meantime. But I would love to continue this Open USA conversation with you both. Kanish Tharoor, Anthony Barnett, this is a huge pleasure. Let's do it again. Paul McCarthy produced and edited this conversation for Open Source at the Watson Institute at Brown University. Join the conversation, please, with your own words online at our site, www.radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon, eager to hear from you.